interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism. To bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 586. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. It's the only way we're going to have this done. Because things that are thought known, but not so, are sowing the seeds of division. Though Atah has, by most here, been given a free hand to corrupt, and no one is relying on any objective basis in their thoughts, and more importantly, their actions, which is what we bring them behind the woodshed to remind them of, if nothing else. Trump classified documents case dismissed. The appointment of a special prosecutor was unconstitutional, a judge has ruled. Special counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of former U.S. President Donald Trump over the alleged mishandling of classified documents has been thrown out on grounds that Smith's appointment was not legal. Smith was appointed by Attorney General Merrick Garland to investigate Trump for supposedly keeping classified documents at his Florida home after leaving the White House, as well as probing an alleged conspiracy to overturn the 2020 election. Quote, none of the statutes cited in the legal authority for the appointment gives the Attorney General broad inferior officer appointing power or bestows upon him the right to appoint a federal officer with the kind of prosecutorial power wielded by the special counsel, Smith. Judge Aileen Cannon wrote, the, quote, strained statutory arguments appeals to inconsistent history and a reliance out of circuit authority by Smith have not persuaded the court otherwise, Cannon added. Quote, the dismissal of the lawless indictment in Florida should be just the first step, followed quickly by the dismissal of all the witch hunts, Trump said in a post-Truth Social responding to the ruling. Quote, let us come together and end all the weaponization of our justice system and make America great again. The FBI raided Trump's residence in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, in August 2022, confiscating several boxes of documents. According to the Washington Post, some of the materials related to U.S. nuclear secrets, Iran's missile program, and Washington's intelligence activities in China. A federal grand jury in Miami, Florida, indicted Trump for mishandling the documents in September 2023, and Trump pleaded not guilty and argued that he had done nothing wrong since he was the ultimate declassification authority. The court documents unsealed in May this year showed that the Department of Justice had authorized the use of deadly force when necessary during the raid. Last month, the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed the president had absolute immunity from prosecution from any other official actions, that they were still liable for unofficial conduct, but the courts could not speculate about motivation when making that determination. Smith's other case against Trump in the Washington, D.C. federal court remains open for now. So I have a link to the opinion if you are interested in this important decision. Spoke about it prior, and this is, it'll explain the limitations that are supposed to be maintained and how to read for them, and showing us they are not people, these people in supposed, well, these authorita, these people in positions, these officials, they're not necessarily there with authority. We assume, they assume power against us wherever they can. So they must be challenged at every step, as I've been advocating forever. It doesn't seem to matter what it is. As I've told you, even senior judges, magistrate judges, when you're doing an Article III matter, neither one of those offices are Article III competent. And so you got to look at this stuff, and this is one of those evidences that the law can work if it is just looked at and or you insist on it. Now, the other caveat is you're not supposed to have to insist. The judge is supposed to sit in there as a trust duty to all of us. I've explained, and anybody who's involved with this knows that's not the case anymore, and I don't even know more what to say. It's why we have to fight, 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 I guess, is now the new slogan. However, we'll see where that goes. So these types of things that have come down through someone like a private citizen Smith, this is, The Matrix is not a movie, citizen Smith, causes the defamation and false and misleading perceptions that are caused by this kind of lawfare and identified as one potential element building towards reason someone would use in deciding to kill Trump. So read for the opinion and understand what's coming on and how this was building. And Representative Massey, we then read next to this, right after this, challenged the top law officer over this private citizen prosecuting the people, this Merrick Garland. He's the top law officer of the United States. Representative Massey presses Garland on constitutionality of Special Counsel Jack Smith's appointment. Again, I can't, this is so important to understand, all these appointments, these delegations of authority, people making, in official places, making comments that they have no authority to make. It's kind of the point about I was making about the great COVID swimmer, but let's stay on point here. It's all the same challenges. Quickly, you just go look and see, it's in the black and white, what they're supposed to be able to do or not. Representative Massey questioned Garland about Reagan-era AG Ed Meese's arguments that Jack Smith's appointment, Smith as special counsel, is unconstitutional in a hearing Tuesday. Garland testified before the House Judiciary Committee and was questioned by Massey on Smith's appointment to oversee the classified documents on January 6th probe into former President Donald Trump. During Tuesday's questioning of Garland, Massey exposed the fraudulent nature of Garland's appointment of special counsel and unauthorized creation of a sham government entity to go after Trump. The dialogue went such as this, Representative Massey saying, "Was Jack Smith nominated by President Biden?" A.G. Garland says, "No, he was not." Massey asks another question, "Was he confirmed to the Senate?" And A.G. Garland says, "No, he was not." Massey asks, "When was the special counsel statute passed?" Garland says, "There is no special counsel statute. There was an independent counsel statute that was expired." Massey says, "So it expired. So what gives you the authority to appoint a special counsel? You've created an office in the U.S. government that does not exist without authorization from Congress," and Massey posed to Garland. Garland responded to Massey that there are regulations under which the Attorney General appoints special counsel. They have been used in effect for 30 years, maybe longer, under both parties. The matter that you're talking about whether someone can have an employee of the Justice Department serve as special counsel, has been adjudicated, he said. Representative Massey interjects like a duck all over a June bug on this, upon Garland's assertion that the matter of the question was on appeal. Because you appealed to a regulation, a rule, whereas the Constitution says shall be established by law. You refer to a regulation, not to U.S. code, says Massey. So catch the important distinction here. I talk about this all the time. Rules are promulgated to implement the law. They are not the law. So can you go back a couple broadcasts and listen how removing the agency deference removes yet another shield that was protecting administrative lawlessness, internal discussions and decisions that were not authorized by law. Garland argued the special counsel appointments that he and other AGs, including Attorney General William Barr, have made cite a regulation that points to a statute. And if it's not so clear before, Garland cannot rely on past Attorney General's acceptance. He's duty-bound to identify the failure of the rule wrongly promulgated and remove the rule from his own use, not mischaracterize it or use it to commit lawfare, as we're watching. Meese, however, in his briefs, filed in several points in the Trump cases, argued that none of those statutes, nor any other statute or constitutional provision, remotely authorized the appointment by Attorney General or a private citizen to receive extraordinary criminal law enforcement power under the title of special counsel. It seems like you've created an office that would require an act of Congress, yet there's not an act of Congress that authorizes that. And even if it didn't require an act of Congress, and you've already admitted that there was no act of Congress that established this office, it would still require, according to the Constitution, the nomination by the President and confirmation by the Senate, Massey said to Garland. So this is all, as I've been saying, week after week now, basic. Law 101, relative to official delegations of state power, even federal state power. And this chief law officer of the nation is attempting to make mincemeat of the requirements of law, essentially making war on the laws of the United States. And I'll let my listener determine what making war on the laws of the United States defines in one word. Even as an appearance of dereliction of duty, which has caused this harm, proven in the dismissal of the suit against Trump, until these sorts of massive failures are corrected to bring government back into some much better constraint, I'm not sure this place gets fixed. And I think Massey's actually saying that because it can't fix this place. Well, I think it can be, but it's going to take people like Massey, not just talking, and that's the next point of this. Not just talking, but actually functioning to do something, to bring accountability, literal accountability. And I pointed out statutes that will do that. And so that's where we turn back to Massey. What is Massey going to do to stop this official insurrection, even treason, to the laws of the United States? So I have a link also to a forum with Massey video in it, the segment, and also the Lawfare dress down of the evasive insect here, Garland, by Representative Matt Gaetz, that I think is a must hear, each one of them. You can get the sense in a video that you can't get me talking or him seeing and reading it. Just watch what's going on. Watch the techniques and tactics to trap this insect in a corner, and there's not really much he can do. But again, where are these congressional ducks going to capture this insect and not just create entertainment in the chase? Is an ongoing problem with our nation, such that it is, as this defamation, this calling people out wrongly, no authority to do so, creating an atmosphere of tense tension that people respond to, we get the result. Gunfire erupts at Trump's speech in Pennsylvania, former president injured. Gunfire reportedly erupted at former U.S. President Donald Trump's speech in Pennsylvania on Saturday. The former president was speaking at his rally in the city of Butler when it was cut short by the sound of gunshots. Trump then put his hand to his ear, sat down behind the podium, and surrounded by bodyguards, as the broadcast showed. And you'll look around, you'll find these videos. One of these links might even have it. But a near-death experience becomes an opportunistic moment for Trump. I want to look at this opportunistic thing a little bit. On all sides, it seems. The former president appeared to tell his Secret Service staff to wait as the Secret Service rushed him off the stage. Trump then fist-pumped the air, repeating the word fight. Richard A. Goldinger, Butler County District Attorney, confirmed to a reporter from the Washington Post that the suspected shooter at Trump's rally is dead, as well as an attendee to the event. The response of this, U.S. politicians now on both sides, you look how this works out. Look what, and also, this occurred to me, look how little they're talking about banning assault rifles. And that just seems to kind of just slipped away. There's not much at all talked about that. Both sides understand this is a very sensitive matter, and it may bring up more questions about why, beyond just politics. A U.S. politician on both sides responded to the incident. U.S. President Joe Biden, who is running for a second presidential term against Trump, released a statement addressing the shooting on Saturday. Quote, I've been briefed on the shooting at Donald Trump's rally in Pennsylvania, he said. Quote, I'm grateful to hear that he's safe and doing well. I'm praying for him and his family, for all those who were at the rally, and we await further information. The First Lady Jill and I are grateful for the Secret Service for getting him to safety. There's no place for this kind of violence in America. We must unite as one nation to condemn it. And that's going to be another theme that seems to pop in through this. And I'm looking at this, not looking at this event as the obvious. I'm looking for what's really going on. What is the response of the people? What maybe ought to have happened? Being careful not to get lost in, as I call it, the noise coming right after this. Everybody's got an opinion. And it's starting to escalate even further. But I think my mind just cuts through all that. In some regard, all this doesn't matter. What is mattering is what we're actually not commenting on, and what we purport to support in all this. Biden also made a public announcement saying the U.S. must never be a killing field. And another thing that's coming out of all this, all these phrases are very interesting. And I'm going to touch on what the problem here is on this one. Lots of phrases coming out, but you'll notice they talk specific to this event. And you turn around and you look farther away across the world, and they're doing the exact thing they say shouldn't happen here, that is happening here. As I said, that mirror, that carnival mirror showing what's going on. The president said Americans need to get out of silos where people only hear views which they agree with, stressing the disagreement is inevitable in a democratic country, and urging everyone to lower the temperature in our politics, a political discourse following an assassination attempt on Donald Trump. There is no place in America for this kind of violence, any violence, period. No exceptions. We cannot allow this violence to be normalized, Biden said. But look at that. Isn't a state just it's just violence. State is violence. I don't know how we get around that. Anyway, we're watching these euphemisms used against us and try to protect them. But if you point out to somebody, you got three fingers pointing back, is this issue, this event brings a lot of these things out. Politics must never be a little battlefield and, God forbid, a killing field, the president said. He added, the differences must be resolved peacefully through debate and elections, not with bullets. But the U.S. normalizes other places in the world as killing fields with bullets and bombs, not with dialogue, debate, diplomacy, or any of that. Even genocide, right, Joe? The hypocrisy, meaningless words meant to placate people for a vote, it seems here, these hypocritic statements. These are just political prostitutes, as I was saying earlier, maybe a month now. Biden is saying things, they're all saying, essentially, if you listen close, they're all saying things just for a vote. The vote is really the most important thing. The politics is more important than being good policy, good moral, lawful, just. And all this report here, although the attack was widely condemned by both Republican and Democrats, Trump supporters have argued the Democrats and the media were guilty of inciting hatred against Trump. And this is that defamation and all these mechanisms that bring all this up. Melania Trump also spoke after the attempt on her husband's life. The former First Lady has condemned Saturday's violent act as a campaign rally as a heinous crime. Former First Lady Melania Trump on Sunday condemned the attack on her husband at the rally the previous day, urging fellow Americans to come together and reunite in the wake of the incident. And this is interesting to me, too. She must have a very strong hand in their family because she says it first. And then he comes out and matches it. Now, I believe he has a reason. I think he knows his son comes out and says it. This attack, for as strong as he is, it changed him. And anything like this, I would say, would. And he's taking a little bit different tack now because of it. But she comes out, and I find it very interesting here. She says we should reunite. Quote, when I watched the violent bullet strike my husband, Donald, I realized my life and Barron's life were on the brink of devastating change. I am grateful to the brave Secret Service agents and law enforcement officials who risked their own lives to protect my husband, she said in a statement describing the suspected attacker as a monster and his deed as a heinous crime. The ex-First Lady also urged fellow Americans to focus on arguably more important things such as love, compassion, kindness, and empathy, rather than on political rivalry. Let us reunite now, this morning, ascend above the hate and vitriol and simple-minded ideas that ignite violence. We all want our world where respect is paramount, family is first, and love transcends. We can realize the world again. Each of us must demand to get it back. We must insist that respect fills the cornerstones of our relationships again, she stated. So as I said, Trump's son came out and said the assassination attempt did change it, his father, and hearing now the reconciliation coming from what he claimed he tore up his first speech that was going to go to the convention, and he tore that up and went to a different direction. Sowing further party division is likely undesirable for Trump anyway, if you think about this thing. And so this is a smart tactic if it is politics. But I think there's some reality going on here. I think we saw a providential thing happen. It doesn't mean that I'm absolutely completely Trump. That's all. Not at all. What happened was very, very interesting, though. And I would hope it causes us to start looking a lot closer, and we do need to take the responsibility, as I've been advocating behind Woodshed. It's up to us to start insisting in peaceful but strenuous ways to not necessarily reunite, but to not cause our division, because we are going to have things that we're not all agreeable on, but we're going to have the maturity and diplomacy to bring our differences forward. And that doesn't mean we have to put up with a bunch of nonsense like these sustainable cancel culture type groups. which are just insane, mindless. That's not what we're talking about, not what I'm suggesting either. So this all seems to work. This whole event seems to work in his favor in that regard too, where now unity, again, see this word unity, and boy, they're really softly pussyfooting around what I've been telling you, what unity, global unity is about. And don't underestimate, that's really where it's all kind of going, whether you see it now or not. The players are setting up to bring that type of unity in. And don't underestimate the religious aspect of this sitting right there too. All this is playing together very well, and I still can't get my mind wrapped around how well this plays together, even if we just consider some kid tried to kill him for some reason, and they don't have a motive, which I find fascinating too. But even Trump now responds the next day to the assassination attempt, and he says, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be dead. The former U.S. president has said he wants to unite the country after surviving an assassination attempt. Donald Trump has said he is lucky to be alive after being targeted by a shooter during a campaign rally in Pennsylvania on Saturday. The doctor told him it was a miracle that he survived. Quote, by luck or by God, many people are saying it's by God. I'm still here, he added. The Secret Service, quote, did a fantastic job by swiftly neutralizing the attacker, he said. They took him out with one shot, right between the eyes. And I want you to remember what they say here, one shot, right between the eyes, for as maybe gruesome as that may sound. I don't want to highlight it for sensationalism. There's a point that I'm going to be bringing up here. The former president said he had, I guess I got to interject too, there's a big question of whether or not the Secret Service did a fantastic job. But this is his take on it, and I understand he doesn't want to anger anybody any further that may have actually to take care of him at some point. So we'll see about that. But the former president said he had appeared and he had prepared an extremely tough speech all about the corrupt, horrible administration for the event in Milwaukee, but threw it away after the assassination attempt. I want to try to unite our country, but I don't know if that is possible. People are very divided. And it just seems that's the truth. That's what's been going on. There's been division built into the system. We've been talking about it for years. It's not even his administration, not even Biden. It's a systemic thing. And in lots of different subject matter areas. This is not even one thing either. I mean, this is so well folded together, this dimensional attack against people. They're playing on all their weaknesses, and people seem to be willing to allow themselves to be played. Very few stand up and do this. In fact, that he's now been shown, if you will, his mettle in doing this, is what seemed people are describing it. That he's like the only one that would really seem to be doing that is kind of interesting to me. And this is what my complaint about us as people, not anybody in particular, not a judgment. Somehow we've lost that ability to fight with each other, not with each other, shoulder to shoulder with each other, against a more important thing that needs to be bested. And so this is one of the things I think needs to be considered as we move along. What's more important to us? Some of these other, a lot of these smaller divisions? Or do we have to understand that there's a way to look at all this that we're all being taken down? And what are those elements that are taking us down? All of us. Playing us against our differences. And to hear, as we go through this event, again, I'm not going to get too deep in it. I'm going to make some comments to it. There's so much going on. I said the noise became so much even not to be able to deal with it all. This topic, if you got interested in it, you're watching the microcosm of this government's failures in this event as well, which is very interesting to me. It would take a crew of people talking on a broadcast in order to cover this and allow a more proper review of it. But I'm not so sure. For me, it starts to come out. It doesn't really matter, because I hope I'll get to the point here. We'll see. We are encouraging and allowing and cheerleading something that isn't even given to us. We're not even accepting what's being promoted by the people that we will support, like a Trump. Fight, fight, fight. And I'll get to that part. But so despite here on all this, and as soon as it happened, the FBI comes in, they're going to get their evidence, and despite the commonly held belief that evidence goes to the FBI to die. Let's take a look at this next yarn and see if we can do better after getting behind the woodshed with it. The FBI is stumped over Trump shooter's motive. And I want you to look at this. What's stumping them? Take note of what's stumping them. And this is the things that I think I've been suggesting that we need to do in some regard to anonymity, understanding how we get tracked down. Not that we're doing wrong. It's that you don't know when you're doing wrong. You don't know when someone's decided, some bureaucrats decided, that you violated some rule, some regulation that has no force and effect in law. And they run with it. And they run with it through administration after administration. I hope you picked that up, what Massey was doing and talking about. This thing continues and goes on. And there was no authority for it. And again, another thing I've advocated that we challenge up front, and I think it takes many because they're not listening. And it takes a few people on that have the ability to do so to start to bring it out. The FBI is stumped over Trump shooter's motive. Investigators have not established what drove the man, the agency reports. This is days after now. They still don't have it. They start bringing out little tidbits of information, but let me get to the reports here, although they'll never get through all these information. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, has so far failed to establish what drove the 20-year-old man to open fire on the U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump at a campaign rally at Saturday. The Associated Press news agency has reported the FBI has conducted an extensive search in the 3 days following the assassination attempt, cracking into Thomas Matthews Crooks' mobile phone, securing his computer, home, and car, as well as interviewing more than 100 people. But the mystery motive remains as elusive as the moment the shooter happened, the agency outlined. According to a law enforcement official briefed on the ongoing investigation, the shooter's phone had not immediately yielded any meaningful clues about his motive. Again, he's a 20-year-old, relatively intelligent, it seems like, in the readings of what's going on. And listen to what they don't have on his phone. Everybody thinks they can't find it. And I'm thinking maybe he was a little bit ahead of the game, and maybe there's nothing much to find unless he wanted them to find it. Now, again, I'm not making up anything here. I'm just asking us to think, how could this situation be? Everybody wants to condemn the FBI. Maybe this kid was just a little bit ahead. I'm not saying that he's good in doing that. I'm saying this is what innocent people are going to have to do. Because if you get to the point when a bureaucrat without lawful authority starts attacking you, and there's no one that wants to see that for administration after administration, you're going to need techniques and tactics in order to keep them at bay, keep someone like that at bay. According to law enforcement official briefed on the ongoing investigation, the shooter's phone had not immediately yielded any meaningful clues about his motive. So far, neither a suicide note nor any writings or social media posts have been uncovered, and that could explain his reasons for targeting Trump. Well, I have a theory, folks. It was derived from one sentence stated in various ways in the various daily notices that came out about this. Because why would a registered Republican attempt to kill a successful Republican contender, but maybe the only one actually in this case, for the office of president? What if this 20-year-old was savvy enough to reinstall the operating system on the computer and his phone, leaving minimal history? And what if his motive has nothing to do with politics? The sentence in general was, Crooks worked as a dietary aide, a job that generally involves food preparation at Bethel Park Skilled Nursing Rehabilitation, less than 1 mile from his home. While generally described as a food prep and dishwasher kitchen cleaner, a number of websites that I was reading can be found to read and offer something more, and a bit differently describe the position of dietary aide, such as, quote, this position offers an opportunity to contribute to the well-being of residents while gaining valuable experience in the dietary field. Join our team and make a difference in the lives of others through your culinary skills and dedication. And some offers say that the food service is included in the position, communicating with the residents of the facility. In other words, you can talk with them, learn what they want, learn what they need, converse, make friends. and I'm going to focus on the making the difference in their lives. So what if Occam says this kid was the guy, that he cared for the residents there, and he was described as quiet and a nice kid who never talked poorly of anyone, and I never have thought him capable of anything I've seen him do in the past few days, one of the reports had claimed. But what if he made friends with the number of the care facility residents? What if he started noticing those he cared for started dying? What if he started to notice a pattern to those deaths? What if the patterns were connected to Trump's warp speed attack? And that shot jabbed around the world killed a number of his closest friends, maybe family, in the nursing facility. Might someone or many people he cared for that died because of Trump's decision become a focus for his retribution? That this attempt on Trump's life isn't about politics, left, right, or Antifa, as it's come out to, which is irrelevant, and it is not true. And what if the absence of any other evidence, by its absence, Occam here is correct? Occam also says then, we're looking at absolute incompetence in the security service here, security services, and a failure in communications during the event, which would also explain most everything else we've heard since then in the cover-up of the incompetence, and in what we saw as well as the scapegoating a couple days later that Iran done it. Well, because Israel wants the U.S. to go to war with Iran, and the Zionists J.D. Vance and Trump are okay with it. J.D. Vance used to be opposed to Trump, but now they're two peas in a pod, it seems. My first impression here, looking when you look at these videos of the day, of the close-up, and I have a bit of a videographer's eye. That's what I used to do. And a photographer's eye. That's what I used to do. And so I'm analyzing, like, production side either as well, just watching and trying to witness what I see and trying to keep level-headed, if you will. Don't get all wrapped up in, especially since you start reading, you start putting stuff in. But watching, trying to walk very carefully, watch. My first impression of the video was this attempt on Trump's life after qualifying what I thought the miss would look like. Before I saw the video, I was saying, where would that shot have to come from? And what would he have to do? What's the angles? What's it look like in my mind's eye? And what would that moment look like? And so I created that in my mind and then I found the video. And that, what I put in my mind's eye of what would have to happen, fit exactly. I could see that. That was real. Right beyond that, in looking at this now stage scene, I thought I was looking at a WWF SmackDown event with fake blood and everything, and especially when what looked like the Keystone SWAT cops step out. They took the stage, but Trump is emerging up, being pulled up all disheveled, asking where his shoes are. His shoes of all things. I guess it's now his sneakers he wanted. He got knocked out of his sneakers because of this. He went down to the ground. How'd he get out knocked out of his sneakers? Anyway, so SWAT team members come out, and they look contrived, awkward, like performed. They were all performing. But as I said before, there was another element here that seems prevalent in all of this, was a lack of communication or situational awareness that could answer their awkwardness. I mean, one guy was looking out in the crowd. You'd think he'd be staring out. No, he turns around, and he looks at the heap of security folks on Trump. He should have never taken his eye off the crowd. And then he was awkward. He moved around, put his back to the crowd and everything else, like he didn't know what was going on. So it looked like there was a big communication gap right there. Again, try to keep it nice and straight, simple. Don't throw too much into it. Try to understand what was going on in the moment. And then later here, we're hearing this multiple shooter theory. Within days, multiple shooters were like coming out. They've been coming out of every nook and cranny, it seems. I think the latest one now is the water tower zip line type thing. Now, there's a reason that could be, but that puts a different point on what was going on. But it still doesn't answer the main problem with multiple shooters. Because nobody stops to think, it seems. I've never seen anybody talk about it. There's a problem with multiple shooters. And the problem is all of the shooters missed Trump. I'm talking to assassinate him. They missed him. Except the one bullet that provided the providence for the exploitation of that whole event. The more shooters that there are, the more incompetence there would be in this matter. But we have evidence that sniper incompetence is not valid with the one shot kill between the eyes by the counter sniper, 20 or so seconds into the close-up video of Trump being hit and the aftermath on that stage. There is one shot, one kill. It was only in the talent, was only in the government sniper, if he was. I'm still questioning, where'd that shot come from? Where was the other sniper that took out the crooks, as Trump described, with one shot between the eyes? That's not professional incompetence. That's what the sniper does. That the multiple shooters theory does not. And I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying that there's not really any evidence or sense that it makes if there are. If this were a concerted assassination attempt by many shooters, Trump's killers wouldn't have missed 8 to 10 times. Nor likely that fist-pumping exposure opportunity 3 times more. So if Trump's enemies were involved, the sniper would not be incompetent. I can't believe that they would be incompetent. One shot right between the eyes is not incompetent. 8 to 10 missed shots is not a planned assassination. Was this a setup by omission, maybe, because the seats of decision figured their election is better than planning to pull the trigger themselves by direct command? I'm not so sure that you want to rely on that either. Now, I've not been able to identify that counter sniper's position. It said it was on the building next to the ones we see in the picture. Those guys didn't do it. The other ones, I haven't seen evidence that they existed. That second sniper team was on the building to the right behind the stage when you're looking. And I haven't seen any evidence at all. Although in the video, I do hear one shot and a verbal confirmation that the shooter is down. Then Trump gets up, but no video confirming that fact. So what if we're watching more evidence of the false promises of government to serve and protect anyone? And that if we're missing, what we're missing here is the bigger oxymoron. That in an event touting the red, white, and blue, fight, fight, fight for America, not one red-blooded American at the event had a self-defense appliance as the Constitution reserves to the people to have stopped and arrested the shooter in the first instance. Instead, relying on incompetent authorities to do it for them. That is not my idea of an America we fight, fight, fight for. All the rhetoric and iconic fist-pumping, Iwo Jima flag-planting, evoking imagery to the contrary notwithstanding. They do a good job, don't they, the perception managers of Slavelandia? What if this was a nice kid seeking revenge for the deaths of his friends because of the warp speed attack initiated by Trump? So let's look a little bit closer at the potential, at least. Trump shooter left threatening message on gaming platform. We read, well, it's real threatening. Thomas Matthew Crooks reportedly described the day of his attempted assassination of the presidential candidate as his premier. FBI officials told members of Congress on Wednesday that Thomas Matthew Crooks posted an alarming message on the Steam gaming platform days before his assassination attempt on Donald Trump, several media outlets have reported. Quote, July 13th will be my premiere, watch as it unfolds, the 20-year-old wrote on Steam, a popular platform that allows online gamers to purchase games and communicate. Investigators who analyzed Crooks' laptop reportedly found searches for the phrases including Trump, Biden, when is D.C. convention, and July 13th Trump rally. It was stated that no evidence of any particular ideology was discovered on the laptop, and nobody in investigative interviews recalled Crooks discussing politics. According to experts quoted by the news outlet, the suspect had an account on the encrypted Discord app, suggesting that Crooks preferred anonymous interactions to real-world relationships. So, that's what they are after, and this gives them the reason to come after encrypted and anonymous interactions, is what I'm reading here. If there's a setup, it might be this as well. A spokesperson for the platform told the media that the account had not been used for months and showed no signs that it had been used by crooks to plan the attack, promote violence, or discuss political views. Investigators also highlighted some of the searches on one of the cell phones, saying that he had looked up, quote, major depressive order, close quote. The New York Times reported, citing a person briefed on the matter. So, two money quotes supporting Meissen is one, he showed no signs for discussing political views, and two, he had looked up major depressive disorder. I don't think we have to go that far to figure out a motive, if it's what I'm saying. And I don't think that they looked at, if he was doing any research into the great Comey swindle that killed somebody, that was instituted and initiated by Trump, then it may be too far-fetched a jump. And as I told Gary L. on Twitter, without evidence to the contrary, I'm correct. I'm at least as correct as anybody that may have a theory. And it's why you wouldn't see much. Now, I'm not advocating any of this. At some point, all these really intelligent kids are coming, and they're not liking what they're seeing. And I would advocate to them, don't go that way. Let's see your brilliance. Let's bring your intelligence out. Let's see you do what you need to do in better ways. Contribute. I'm not necessarily a reuniting type guy, but there's a mutual defense thing that goes on. There's a mutual consideration of a nation, of who we are. And I can get behind, and maybe easily, Vince, easily get behind people who like property, who understand it, who understand why it's important, who understand how unique the United States is about it. I could unite with people around that and then make sure, as I do, and we talk about behind the woodshed about the laws that protect that, the obligations of government, not the beating down on you about it. No, the trust obligation that they're supposed to protect in you. That's the America I want. I could unite with people for that. But it's not uniting, necessarily. That's supposed to be who we are. And I guess that's what I'm saying about the event. Not a one red-blooded American had a self-defense appliance to be able to make a felony arrest on that kid. Why? And yet they're all there waving a flag and Trump, 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 and voting and electing and whatever the heck they think they're doing. And not one of them was able to defend themselves. Had to wait on authority, completely, what looks to be completely incompetent and incommunicado between themselves. And I'm, again, Occam, not throwing too much more into it. There's lots of stuff going on around about all these pieces of information, and I'm not so sure they're not all so much noise to keep us off the point, and it may be a simple point. The Thor talk cannot tell you that it's incompetent. It has to be keep your confidence and keep your trust, while it destroys its trust that it's supposed to do for you. And so, that's so far my take on this. Again, I think we watched Providence that day. There's going to be something coming. I'm not necessarily embracing it. I think I saw Stranahan might have been. I think I saw a quick quote. I'm not supportive of Trump. I think he said he's someone who's imperfect that's being used for good things. Probably the best description of what I think is going on. Quite literally a miracle we watched, and thankfully so. We didn't need to see another one, but I don't think that they left it open. Someone who wanted to take him out didn't leave it open to some 20-year-old kid. Certainly he failed. And now the scrutiny is now on everybody, which is a good thing in a way. I think that needs to be furthered up and followed down and tracked. And then accountability as quickly as possible. So in addition to the fallouts of this incompetence and the things that are being bought behind the scenes, we found out BlackRock was involved with that kid in a video. Why? BlackRock seems to be a name that's everywhere. Vanguard, State Street, all these big global bankers are involved in all these things anymore, it seems. And I think that's partly what I was reflecting in the 2009 fraud. That's how they do this. Toxic debt. They reinvest. They have plans to take people out of places. They manipulate the markets and get you to buy in. You think you can do a mortgage, and then they raise rates on you, and you can't. You can't make it, so they take it back from you. Nobody understands property enough to watch out. Nobody uses it. Everybody uses the debt system, the fiat system, the paper system, instead of going back to substantial, tangible asset side money, if you will. We have more investment by these folks. We're making a killing as well. The BlackRock linked firm shorted Trump stock ahead of shooting. Austin Private Wealth has blamed a clerical error on the filing. The Texas-based investment company has denied trying to short 12 million shares of Trump Media and Technology Group just before the failed assassination attempt on the U.S. presidential candidate, claiming it was a clerical error. I like the one, know what they're talking about, the 9/11, where everybody shorted that day and the stocks on that day. But they're moving back to this. Same plan, it looked like. Not making any allegations. This is what's going on, and this is the excuse that they're using. Short selling involves borrowing a security whose price the borrower thinks is going to fall and then selling it on the open market. One then buys the same stock back later, hopefully for a lower price than it has initially sold for, returns the borrowed stock to the broker, and pockets the difference. Trump was speaking at the rally in Butler, Pennsylvania on Saturday when an assassin fired several shots at his head, nicking his ear, killing one audience member and injuring two more. The day before, a company called Austin Private Wealth LLC made a filing with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, for a put option on 12 million shares of $DJT. To outside observers, this looked like a bet that the company's value would go down drastically, as it would if Trump had been killed. One sleuth on X, Twitter, even got screenshots from the Bloomberg terminal showing that the company's put option, which then disappeared later in the day. Others pointed out that Austin had major holdings in Vanguard and BlackRock funds, claiming that they had links to George Soros and the Rothschild family as well. The apparent BlackRock connection fueled suspicion further, as the alleged shooter had once appeared in the commercial for investment behemoth. BlackRock yanked the ad after the attempted assassination, which they denounced as abhorrent and awful. Quote, the SEC filing, which showed that Austin Private Wealth shorted a large number of shares of Trump Media Technology Group Corporation, DJT, was incorrect, and we immediately amended it, so as soon we learned of the error, the company said. So, I looked at that, BlackRock didn't lose in its sure bet gone bad either? They amended that put? APW holds 12 contracts of 12,000 shares, not 12 million, as was filed in error, the statement said, blaming a third-party vendor for multiplying all option contracts by 10,000. The report was filed on July 12th to reflect the company's June 28th position, but was amended on July 16th when APW became aware of the problem. Quote, we deeply regret this error and concern it has caused, especially at such a fraught moment for our nation, the company said, adding that it's reviewing in our internal procedures to understand what happened. So this sounds to me like the SEC needs to investigate those internal procedures to see if they were also connected with some bet insurance, such as grooming kids from high school to become future depressed shooters that can listen to little CIA voices in their head to kill people. Or, this is a kid who felt something for his friends and said that's enough. He figured out who did it, and he was going to take the law into his own hands. And I don't want anybody to consider that for themselves. This is not really the way to do it. But at some point, this is another turning point. We don't start seeing accountability. Your nation is lost. What are you going to do about it? Essentially there. But there's more of this finance bankering going on. Looking for a killing here. These financial bankers are making a killing, it just seems everywhere, until they get caught. Ontario court declares COVID nasal swabs unlawful, overturning $6,255 fine. The court case revolves around here the traveler that was returning home, but after arriving at Pearson International Airport on 9th April 2022, she rejected a nasal swab test. She was then consequently convicted of failing to comply with the Quarantine Act and got a fine that, together with additional charges, landed at a whopping $6,255. An Ontario court ruled in favor of Mesa Fernando, a woman who refused a COVID-19 nasal swab test returning to Canada on April 22nd. However, Ontario Court Justice Paul Monahan overturned her conviction, stating that the requirement for a nasal test was unlawful as it involved the insertion of an instrument into the traveler's body. This ruling highlights the limitations of the Quarantine Act regarding invasive screening tests. The judge said, quote, I do decide that nasal test swab test was an unlawful requirement or demand. Refusal to comply with the requirements or demand was lawful on her part because the requirement or demand made of her by the screening officer was not lawful. As we can read in the story, Peter Sweden observed, when you think about it, how on earth was it considered acceptable for people to be forced to get a foreign object poked in their nose to begin with? Yeah, the guy behind the woodshed was just asking everyone to demand authority to follow the law. But no one acted other than as a herd of wild animals, which is how they treated people, as humans, in an open field, without limitation, because no one insisted on the law imposing limitation. Get to the front of the broadcast where Massey's saying, what's the law that allowed you to administratively create an office of the government? Understand, these attorneys are officers of a government. They have sovereign power. This is no small thing. Same thing here. Where was the law is what I was asking. You could have done this across the world. When this comes up again, in a thing that's coming out, not going to be for this broadcast, but something I just heard coming out of Russia. Fascinating statements coming through to show people have it all inverted on what they expected to see. And so they describe it incorrectly, at least from my perspective. But again, let's return to there are limitations. In lands with law that are controlling, there are limitations. But the occupiers, the people of power, will grasp for more power if you'll let them. And I've been advocating for years and years that we don't let them as people. When it comes, something comes against us, we don't let that happen. And there's ways to go back in to the guidance, the limitation of these officials, these power grabbers, to put them in their place. Why would you? So there's limitations, even if it takes years to enjoy them, even for open fields. This is a big case, although it's just right now in Tennessee. Tennessee's Wildlife Agency won't appeal historic ruling on warrantless searches. The Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency has decided it will not appeal its most recent court loss regarding searches conducted under the Open Field Doctrine, to the Tennessee Supreme Court. The decision, first announced by the Institute for Justice, means that Tennessee wildlife officers will no longer be allowed to access private lands unless they have explicit permission of the landowner or have obtained a court-ordered search warrant. In 2018, Terry Rainwaters and Hunter Hollingsworth found hidden cameras on their West Tennessee property. They subsequently sued TWRA for violating their rights under the state constitution. Up until then, TWRA wildlife law enforcement officers had operated under the Open Fields Doctrine, the legal basis used by the wildlife law enforcers in numerous states and by federal wildlife law enforcers. In 1924, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution does not protect any land beyond the home and its immediate surrounding area. The court reaffirmed the doctrine in 1984 when it held that the property owners had no reasonable expectation of privacy on any land the court deemed to be an open field. However, Institute of Justice attorneys, arguing on behalf of Rainwaters and Hollingsworth, said that the doctrine violates the Tennessee Constitution. They won their court battle, including the most recent decision for the Tennessee Court of Appeals. TWRA's next course of action would have been to appeal to the Tennessee Supreme Court. However, the agency has decided it will not appeal. Following the ruling, Rainwaters and Hollingsworth's attorney told us, quote, I think the best way to describe how my clients feel is safe. They can go and find some solitude, and that was destroyed by not only finding government cameras on their land, spying on them, but the government officials coming on and roaming around. In its news release about the case, the Institute for Justice said, quote, with the state declining to appeal to the Tennessee Supreme Court, this victory over warrantless searches is cemented. Quote, in 19, 26, 2 years after the United States Supreme Court announced the Open Fields Doctrine, the Tennessee Supreme Court held that private and deserves more protection, says Joss Windham, co-director of the Institute for Justice Project on the Fourth Amendment. But for the last century, state game wardens have been ignoring that important decision, roaming Tennesseans' private land at will. No longer. In May, Court of Appeals Judge Jeffrey Usum wrote that TWRA's contention is a disturbing assertion of power on behalf of the government that stands contrary to the foundations of the search protections against arbitrary government intrusions in the American legal tradition. This was the first such win for the Institute of Justice, but it says it is now litigating similar cases against open fields doctrines in Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Louisiana. The Institute of Justice said that the case is another major victory for IJ's project on the Fourth Amendment, which strives to protect one of our foundational property rights, the right to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. Later this year, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court will hear argument in the similar case from two hunting clubs, which were subjected to similar searches and hidden cameras. Quote, property isn't private if the government can watch you wherever it wants, says IJ President and General Counsel Scott Bullock. We are confident that this victory is just the first in what will become a series of wins reinvigorating protections against warrantless searches. So I have to add, this is a trust breach and a breach of the peace and of lawful settlement. And the United States Supreme Court was wrong in breach to not recognize the granted exclusive enjoyment and use disposal of the soil. Absolutely. There's a couple of property cases. The Wheat case in 38, I think. Same thing. Completely wrong. Supreme Court of the United States failed its trust duty to protect the grants of the government to the people, exclusive to those people, the evidence of which is in your land patents. Now, this is a big deal. I hope they keep going. I've been involved in a case of a friend who was involved with this open field doctrine in a state that didn't turn it over. That's how I started to understand it years and years ago, decades ago. And so this is what they do. They encroach. There was a rule. Remember, this is just the executive. There is no law behind what they do. It's taken years to get this corrected. And they did it even though the Supreme Court in that state said no early on, 2 years after. The federal doesn't necessarily track through the state. And again, we go back to the great Coby swindle. That's why I thought it would be perfect, because the health matters are reserved, like wildlife, is reserved to the states. And yet it meets up against property rights. So, the law can restore peace to your property. And that's what I keep pointing to. The settlement, that's what settlement actually means. Peace. Keeping the peace is what the sheriff does. But making war on peace is nothing new, nor confined to the law of the land, of the fee that we pay here, the fee, the home of the slave that we now is, because we allow systems that continue to not put the law in its place, up in its foremost position, and they allow executive rule it's the rule of law. See, that's how you do that. It's not law, it's the rule of law. It's exactly what the Bar Association puts in. And in a way, I'm surprised at the Tennessee decision. I'm glad to see it. I'm surprised, though. I'm glad that there's somebody there that are looking at it. This has to go across this country. In fact, if that attorney group or that foundation is looking for people, you may want to have a property in those states they want to go to with your open fields doctrine violation in hand and see if they'll take your land and your case up with it. But the making war on peace is nothing new. Orban hands over the EU plan for resolving the Ukraine conflict. Again, the extension of this philosophy in the world, make war, don't make peace, is around, and there's only a few people standing up to try and make that peace. And right now, Orban's one of them. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has handed over the plan for resolving the conflict in Ukraine with realistic goals and deadlines, the EU leaders, the political director of the Hungarian Prime Minister's office, Balázs Orbán, said on Monday. Quote, as a matter of fact, we are talking about Orbán's plan, which is now on the table, all on the EU Prime Minister and the realistic assessment of the situation and real goals and deadlines are what our approach is based on Orbán. And this, Balázs Orbán stated, Budapest will use its EU presidency period to create conditions for peaceful negotiations, proposing political initiatives. The Hungarian Prime Minister provided detailed information to EU leaders about his visits. These trips were very important, as currently our country is the only one with a fresh and concrete information on thinking of the warring parties and key mediators and how to navigate between different interests, the politician noted. He emphasized that the Europe is serious about peace. If it is serious about peace, it will create a plan that has at least a minimal chance of being implemented. After visiting China, Orbán stated that the parties to the conflict should resolve the crisis around Ukraine, but the U.S., China, and EU have a decisive influence on its resolution. Russian President's Press Secretary Dmitry Peskov noted that Orbán demonstrated his political will for dialogue, which Moscow considers very positive and useful. EU Diplomacy Chief Joseph Borrell said that Orbán does not represent the EU on the international stage and does not have the European mandate for his visit to Russia, despite Hungary's six-month presidency of the EU Council. Orbán responded to Borrell's criticism by saying that due to the nonsense of Brussels bureaucrats, efforts to establish peace in Ukraine are not yielding results. So this is the first evidence, and I think this is very important because of the United States is funding this problem. This is the first evidence of an honest intention toward resolution. I think that it's important to further delineate who are set on war and whom on peace, if possible, because those Brussels bureaucrats seem to want to kill people and sustainably profit from war. And so the bankers must be back behind them as we look through. But it won't be the Brussels bureaucrats that are going to be doing the fighting either. No such thing is included in the now third war plan proposed by Germany, if you understand that and read it. War, not peace proposals, are possible with these folks. And so, very important, I appreciate what Orbán's doing. I've told you, diplomacy. He's come away knowing it's going to be difficult, but at least he's got a schedule to start working on. And he came in and said, let's do peace. And those people in the EU said, no, we don't want peace. You have to understand, it's an interesting, this Joseph Borrell, he may not actually be in any position, and I don't know why Orbán didn't tell him that. He's an executive, if you will, in the EU Council where he's at. Where Orbán is actually making and doing the policy stuff. The Borrell is really the cheerleader for getting people together. And so I think Borrell's a little bit out of his sorts, and I'm surprised that Orbán hasn't pointed that out, unless I have that understanding. That orientation misunderstood. So I was reading through that. It looks like Orbán has some power here to tell the executive of that council, to get to work. Don't fight me. Anyway, we'll see how this works out. And that war that they want to do, that everybody but Orbán wants to see stop, may not turn out too good, where the U.S. cannot match the nuclear capabilities of a peer power. So must maintain the old jalopies parked in silos, and because of massive plunder of the treasury through the cost overruns and laundering machine, this laundering machine, and it is set on spin cycle, it seems, is again tail of the tape what's going on. U.S. focuses on keeping old Minuteman ICBMs working as Sentinel delays soar. And another embarrassment to us as the United States, Russia's getting their war material up, their equipment. And it really does seem superior in so many ways and so far ahead and so far advanced. We don't even have a hypersonic missile yet. It's all this stuff looks more like the military industrial complex profit killing machine more than actually giving the machines that would do protection. And in some regard, I'm really encouraged that Russia doesn't seem to be as aggressive as that we're told in the West that they are. The United States Air Force is giving top priority keeping its aging force of Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs, operational through 2030s as delay and costs continue to soar out of control on the replacement Sentinel ICBM program, General Andrew Cabrera said on Monday. Quote, work needs to be done to ensure that Minuteman III sustainment is unbroken, U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff for Strategic Deterrence and Nuclear Integration General Guevara told the Mitchell Aerospace Institute podcast. Our Air Force is absolutely committed to ensuring that Minuteman is sustained until Sentinel stands up. Well, whatever one might think of Orban, the Brussels bureaucrats, led by Washington warmongers, will not end well for anyone, whether the nuclear jalopies make it out of their silo or not. That was the silo you were really referring to get out of for your political discourse, right, Biden? Yeah, these silos? Yeah, I don't know, folks. It's not looking good as we start keep poking everybody instead of want to make peace. This is BTWRLM 586 as we break through the hour. Glad you could make it. You can put that in a search engine to get the links if you aren't in a place. You get the links to the broadcaster and you can see and read along and then certainly read deeper than what I can touch here today. And right after that assassination attempt on Trump, guess who Trump picked for VP? Trump picks Ohio Senator J.D. Vance for vice president. The choice elevates a one-time fierce critic who became a zealous follower of the former president. He would be the third youngest vice president in history behind John Breckinridge, a 36-year-old, upon taking office in 1857, and Richard Nixon, 40 years and 11 days in 1953. He was selected just days after Trump survived an assassination attempt Saturday, underlining the gravity of the vice presidential selection in stark terms. Quote, after lengthy deliberation and thought and considering the tremendous talents of many others, I have decided that the person most suited to assume the position of Vice President of the United States is Senator J.D. Vance of the great state of Ohio. Trump posted Monday afternoon on Truth Social. A quick look for J.D. Vance. We can go to the wiki. And you can read about him. Interesting connections. And this is where we start to get into the same. He may be young, but he's connected. And it seems like he's connected to all the same players that we're trying to defend ourselves against. Their attacks, and as they make a killing off of us, but we can read, I think, most succinctly, we can find David Icke's statement on ex-Twitter, which I thought was fair enough after reading through some information. He puts it together pretty well. Lots of players, so we can't talk to them all, but we can see what might be going on and see why the support for Trump all of a sudden and whom is doing that. And maybe see the future about it. Globalist Peter Thiel's business partner, J.D. Vance, and Trump's running mate. What a few days for a Trump. The shooting, the financial and promotional support of Elon Musk and other billionaires, the dropping of criminal charges over classified documents today in the Republican nomination convention, 2 days after the shooting at which he has made J.D. Vance his potential vice president, which is now confirmed. They are now the president and vice president candidates of the Republican Party. Vance is the business associate of billionaire Peter Thiel, who serves on the steering committee of the globalist Bilderberg Group and is the founder of Palantir, which provides surveillance and other tech for the Pentagon and intelligence networks. Thiel and Vance also invest in Rumble and fund the Roman Catholic Hollow Prayer app promoted by people like Russell Brand. Thiel was on Trump's transition team after he won the election in 2016, quite an anti-globalist, anti-deep state lineup then. Yeah. The other thing that came out, and there's more to all these interconnectednesses and the special interests that just keeps on giving the gifts. These political prostitutes. The never-Trumper turned MAGA Zionist stand at the walk like Trump Silicon Valley venture capitalist backed by Peter Thiel of Pantier, J.D. Vance, Ohio, was given by the Israel lobby of AIPAC in the Senate, $167,324, I'll have to say, so far. And Iran was just said to have planned to assassinate Trump as Israel asks the U.S. and urges them to go to war with Iran. Should not be overlooked. And who was coming into the office of president, given you feel that it's a done deal with Trump. And so here's the evidence. We talked about all the billionaires. Here's the evidence of big tech, the push to support Trump and Vance. Then why did Elon Musk donate to Trump's campaign right after the assassination attempt and not prior? And as if that event was some sort of cue. And remember, Elon Musk has been intimately involved with most, if not all, the tech players and is already the U.S. government contractor, military contractor. So look at the players, who they're doing, who they know, and understand they can publicly be against each other if they are. None of these, I don't think these are, but they can do that, and it doesn't mean anything behind the scenes. So now, as you look at what is going on with these folks, you see what's being planned, that it's being planned that a black box AI will be in charge of deciding who and what is expendable. Allies of Trump are contemplating intensifying their focus on AI research, but with the aim of expanding its use in military sector and overturning government restrictions on the technology that were implemented by the Biden administration in October 2023, according to a document obtained by the newspaper. Remember, Elon Musk was saying this AI is dangerous to people. He's right in on it, as I've suggested to you, and why Twitter, ex-Twitter, exists and what it's actually doing. But greater military investment in AI could benefit tech companies that presently collaborate with Pentagon, the newspaper continued, naming in particular Adderall, Pantier, and Scale, and adding that the executives at this company support Trump. Silicon Valley, once a Democratic Party stronghold, is now seeing a surge in support from the Republican camp, with a significant chunk of the tech industry's money and power now backing Trump. The U.S. press says the former president has been increasingly rubbing shoulders with tech powerhouses in recent weeks. In particular, he appeared on the All In podcast hosted by prominent tech investors and then attended a fundraising organized by former PayPal executive David Sachs, whose partner was, I think, then Elon Musk, who is reportedly scheduled to speak on behalf of Trump at the convention in Milwaukee. For its part, Forbes called Jacob Hellberg, senior policy advisor to the U.S. defense contractor Palantir Technology, Trump's AI whisperer. In the wake of the assassination attempt, many prominent tech executives have thrown their support behind Trump and endorsed him for the presidency. Tesla CEO and ex-owner Elon Musk tweeted, quote, "I fully endorse President Trump and hope for his rapid recovery," close quote. Remarkably, Musk previously sounded concerned about the rapid growth of AI. Quote, "Probably none of us will have a job. If you want to do a job that's kind of like a hobby, you can do a job. But otherwise, AI and robots will provide any goods and services that you may want," he noted in May. So nothing but industrial complex political pandering for profit under the guise of bringing the utopian panopticonocratic Siberian gulag to fruition, it seems to me here. But that isn't really a guise or deception. It's the plan. And the utopia is for the they, not you. Well, let me further point out, people are expendable, collateral damage to these psychopaths. Trump allies drafting AI Manhattan projects for defense. All these same folks. Let me remind you here on what this is, that in July 16th, 1945, J. Robert Oppenheimer and the Manhattan Project, an American and British project, scientists detonated an atomic bomb for the first time ever at the Trinity site in New Mexico. One witness at the summer camp in Ruidoso, New Mexico, later told Vice that she and other girls played in falling white debris like it was snow, catching it on their tongues and rubbing it in their hair and faces. Others came in contact with the fallout through their environment, and as the radioactive debris infected the surrounding water, crops, livestock, and land. The United States government, keen on avoiding panic and maintaining the project's high level of wartime secrecy, told Tularosa Basin residents that the blast they'd seen was simply an accidental explosion of ammunition and pyrotechnics. Officials chose not to evacuate the area, nor to warn residents of potential health effects. And now there's a report that services showing how far away those people were affected. The fallout from the first U.S. nuclear test reached Canada, the declassified documents reveal. The first trial of a plutonium implosion weapon the explosion on the ground produced radioactive fallout contamination over 1,100 square miles of the state, although some debris spread as far north as Kanukistan, the archive said in a statement on the documents, according to the documents published by the George Washington University National Security Archive on Tuesday. The documents were published on the 79th anniversary of the first nuclear weapon test on July 16, 1945. 6 weeks after the test, there was a swath of fairly high radioactivity on the ground covering an area of approximately 100 miles long by 30 miles wide, a Los Alamos laboratory report said. The biological and public health impact of low level radiation remains a constant issue, the archive said. However, researchers at the National Cancer Institute have concluded that the test's fallout contributed to an excess number of thyroid cancer cases, the archive added. And from another source, we can read, one of the most immediate health impacts of the Trinity site was the spike in infant deaths. In 1947, an alarmed health care provider at Roswell named Catherine L. Behnke wrote to Stafford Warren, who was responsible for radiation safety during the Manhattan Project, to ask if these deaths had any connection to the Trinity test. At the time, the scientists understood that exposure to nuclear radiation could lead to tumors, cancers, and other negative health effects. In fact, 5 days after a Trinity test, Warren had told Manhattan Project leader General Lessig Groves that the nuclear fallout from the test represented a very serious hazard over 2,700 square miles area downwind of the Trinity site. Remember, to Canada, going north-northwest. Despite Warren's knowledge that the fallout represented a huge health risk, his assistant wrote back to Behnke that he hadn't heard about an increase in infant mortality, but in any case, quote, wanted to assure you that the safety and health of the people at large is not in any way endangered. See, folks, not even at warp speed. Still, safe and effective. Effective at the speed of light. This is also the atomic test that scientists were unsure whether the nuclear chain reaction would stop once they started it. And they pushed that cherry red button anyway. But they knew it was safe and effective nonetheless, didn't they? People who lived near Trinity and other nuclear test sites began to identify themselves as downwinders and made connections between their communities' health problems and the government's nuclear tests. In 1990, the United States passed the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act to provide money to some downwinders at the Nevada test site near Las Vegas. However, the act doesn't provide any compensation or apology to the downwinders of the Trinity site. And big AI technopaths, according to Trump, and venture capitalist fans, with similar immunity to the entire world potentially becoming a downwinder on this. And Grimner, the founder of Real Liberty Media, as I was reading that story, I started to wonder about this, and I looked, and he lived 80 miles north of Trinity Base for a number of years, and he died of an aggressive cancer, just coincidentally. These technopaths aren't just interested in global nuclear destruction at the speed of light. No, the Siberian Gulag is going global at the speed of an electron, as we are reminded once again as the plan is rolling out. Putin urges widespread adoption of the digital ruble. Quote, it is important for us in Russia, as they say, not to miss the moment, to set up a legal framework and regulations in a timely manner to develop infrastructure to create conditions for the circulation of digital assets, both within the country and in relation to foreign partners, Putin said at the meeting of economic issues via a video link. Putin also called digital currencies a dynamic and promising sector that was becoming increasingly popular globally. Russia has already made serious progress in the development and regulation of the circulation of digital financial assets, the president also noted. It is necessary to move to widespread introduction of the digital ruble in various sectors of the economy, the president said, adding that timely systemic decisions on the regulation of mining of digital currency should also be made. Almost 1.5% of the total electricity consumption of Russia is spent on mining cryptocurrencies, Quote, according to the estimates of the Ministry of Energy, 16 billion kilowatt hours are spent annually in Russia for these purposes. That is almost 1.5% of the total electrical consumption in the country, and the figure continues to grow. Now, how green is that? Well, it's not, except the economies, the green, the perceived money, that will be programmably controlled by the banker's AI that is sitting now with Palantir and Musk or PayPal. And that is what they're likely going to slow this. This thing is not likely to slow up, and that's what they're presenting now to Trump. AI all everywhere, it seems. And what is Trump and the venture capitalist Vance then in that regard? They're not America first, I can tell you that. Absolutely can't be. And speaking again of the billionaires of the world and how to get them to get there at your expense, because it's a big club, but you ain't in it. Economic monopolization, not domestic multipolarity. 40 banks shut down in sudden vanishing act, absorbed into larger lenders as economy teeters in China, a report says. And you say, oh, it's just in China. No, it's in the United States too. Just watch how they have been collapsing those. They're doing it slightly different. Overnight, 40 banks shut down, vanishing it. Banks are collapsing at an unprecedented rate in China due to the major downturn in the country's property market, poor risk controls, and other issues. In the week ending on June 24th, 40 smaller banks were sucked up by larger institutions. Monopolization. 40 larger institutions sucking up 40 smaller banks. A vanishing act incomparable even to the savings and loan crisis of the 1980s and 90s. The 36 of the 40 failed institutions were all absorbed into the Borg, the giant Borg lender. Liaoning Rural Commercial Bank, which was set up by regulators in September to manage bad banks. According to The Economist, 5 similar institutions have been created in the past 10 months for the same purpose of absorbing small bad banks, which critics warn will only lead to bigger, badder banks. Just like here, folks. We're just not hearing too much about it. Just look around. Look at the commercial property problem in the United States. At the same time, the Chinese economy has shown multiple signs of hitting a wall in the last year, including sharp downturns in residential construction and sales, consumer confidence and consumer prices, combined with a declining population and soaring debt as a percentage of GDP. I guess their shot worked too. More financial institutions could fall into trouble over the next 2 or 3 years. The bankruptcies of 2 rural banks in Liaoning province in 2022 is a sign that government support is becoming more selective. That said, any reduction in support to poorly managed financial institutions could be gradual given the system has many weak small banks. Remember, in the United States, it's simply just raising that interest rate can collapse a small bank. It has nothing to do with their management. It has to do with, well, it is a bit, but I mean, they planned out their future, and then the rates changed to make their returns underwater, if you will, compared to what they expected to get through the time. So we have the time frame now for us at home relative to this. The next 2 to 3 years, they're saying there. Remember, we're lagging 18 months on anything the Fed does relative to the money. So, trying to keep people from heading for the hills as the monetary and fiscal dams begin to burst is what they're trying to do. But if you are ahead of that, you can know where you need to go, essentially. Head for the hills, go independent, mutually non-dependent, I guess is really the really word here, non-dependent, but mutually supported so that you can survive what the hurt that the banker systems want to do with this as they consolidate the holdings. Monopolizing internally, domestic monopolization. But even here we can see and why it's going to continue for a while. Even corruption will not keep the corrupted out. Court ruling over COVID contracts deals embarrassing blow to von der Leyen. The European Commission was wrong to conceal details of its multi-billion euro deals for COVID vaccines. An EU court has ruled in a blow to Ursula von der Leyen. Von der Leyen faces a European Parliament vote on Thursday to secure her appointment for a second term as the president of the EU executive, but the court's decision risks reawakening concerns over how to secure the jabs for the bloc. Brussels did publish the deals, but redacted parts of the agreements, including the names of EU officials responsible for negotiating them. The EU's General Court said that the Commission failed to show how divulging indemnification details would harm the commercial interests of the pharmaceutical groups supplying the vaccines. It also failed a public interest test by keeping secret the names of EU officials involved, the court said. It also found that those behind the lawsuit had demonstrated a public interest of having access to the personal details of the Commission's vaccine negotiating team. Take notes, folks, what you're entitled to. Quote, it was only by having the names, surnames, and details of the professional or institutional role of the members of the team in question that they could have ascertained whether or not the members of the team had conflicts of interest, the court added. But embarrassment here isn't enough. The EU just reinstalled this henchwoman. They voted her in for a second term. Corruption is just agreed, and this is why it's going to continue. As we then see in the health field, but in a different methodology of acceptance, Belarus registers world's first patented lung cancer vaccine from Canada. Quote, the first therapeutic vaccine against lung cancer, Cimavax, received the sanitary registration in Belarus, the minister said on a social media on Sunday. The Cuban pharmaceutical industry continues to deliver great results despite restrictions stemming from the United States' embargo. I wonder why those embargoes, right? You start seeing this when you understand the United States is just a big commerce entity, and it's business, 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 that's it. And the military comes and protects that interest. Then you start to see what maybe these sanctions are really about. As I've said, though, they'll blow back, as I predicted it would. Now even Russia says it was a trade war, as I said it was, not a proxy war. It was a trade war. Just got that out of the lips of Zakharova. Thank you very much. The Cimavax vaccine, produced by Cuba's Center of Molecular Immunology, is the world's first officially patented registered vaccine against lung cancer. The treatment trains the immune system to kill lung cells, to cancer cells, by allowing the immune system to form neutralizing antibodies against epidermal growth factor, or EGF. Now, if you read around, I understand the Cimavax was extensively tested. And it was done correctly by very competent people. We talk a lot behind the woods and watch out these vax and all this. I'm not necessarily against properly used medicine. I told you, antibiotics have their place. When you have nothing else that'll save you, you're going to better take that antibiotic. And I've been there. So I had to make that decision. It wasn't a very hard decision. So, if this is true, then this works, notwithstanding the sanctions of the United States to keep everybody beat down. Be very interesting. Have they finally done something with cancer? All these decades telling us that they were going to find some sort of a cure. Maybe this can actually be used, this SEMA vaccine can be used to counter the great COVID swindle bioweapons with its higher incidence of cancer, would also be an interesting thing to see. But 'tis the season here for cancer cures, it seems, with the potential benefit of immortality as well. 25% more for now, I guess. Scientists report potential anti-aging breakthrough. Therapy blocking a specific protein in the body has shown to increase lifespan and prevent cancer in mice. These proteins are pretty interesting, aren't they? Pretty cool stuff. The team of scientists have been found a way to stave off aging, according to the study published in British science journal Nature on Wednesday. During the trial on mice amongst men, I suppose, a team led by researchers from Duke NUS Medical School in Singapore and Imperial College London found that blocking a protein called interleukin-11 extended the lifespan of mammals and prevented health conditions associated with aging. It was discovered with that age that the body's organs produced increasing levels of IL-11, which in turn promotes fat accumulation, muscle mass loss, hair loss, and cancer. During the trial, a group of middle-aged mice were injected with a drug that uses antibodies to block IL-11. As a result, the lifespan of both male and female mice was increased by up to 25%. Those of you in Greece, you got to be careful. You know, 6 days a week, and then they advance your age of retirement to 90. Well, they're giving you this. The treated animals looked healthier overall and more energetic than those that did not receive the treatment. Less than 16% of the treated rodents had tumors, compared to over 60% of those in the control group. Although our work was done in mice, we hope that these findings will be highly relevant to human health, given that we have seen similar effects in studies of human cells and tissues. Our aim is that one day anti-IL-11 therapy will be used as widely as possible so that people the world over can lead healthier lives for longer, Medical Express quoted Professor of Cardiovascular Medicine Stuart Cook is saying. Scientists in Russia have also made progress on a cancer prevention. Health Minister Mikhail Murashko revealed last month that researchers were finalizing preclinical trials of the vaccine against the disease. The jab, I'm not hearing mRNA here, are we? We're not hearing that either. So, like I said, I'm not going to condemn all this. Just interesting. I find interesting that this IL-11 is something that is in us, and I wonder why. What is that? But moving here, last little bit of the paragraph. The jab that is currently being tested on mice was described as a therapeutic vaccine that would be administered to those already diagnosed with cancer. And so, interesting what's going on around cancer, and I do hope that they have a fix for that. If we can't make it easy on ourselves, and maybe diet isn't enough, because what they're doing is they're giving us bad stuff to put in our environment. Our environment is causing these problems. We might need to be looking at I'm more interested in how they're doing it, and can we get an alternative to that? Is there an analog to that process to stop those things going on in the body? So that's why I'm also interested. I said science can teach us, technology can teach us certain things. Maybe we can find a natural alternative. Needing immunity from this next disease when the Siberian gulag coughs, there will be chaos, exposing the underlying global world order as we read, cyber glitch causes chaos worldwide. In the early hours of Friday, the massive global technological outage shut down airlines, medical services, TV broadcasters, banks, and other businesses and services around the world. Some states reported outages in 9/11 emergency services overnight as call centers were impacted by the outage. Britain's National Health Service was crippled Friday morning as hospitals were unable to access their computer systems. Put this in your mind, folks. This is almost looks like a setup. This looks like this was a drill, but it's going to be a plan. And remember, we've been told about the October surprise. Okay, keep these things in your mind here. What's going on? How this affected lots of places, not everyone, but lots of places. According to the reports, the global outage was caused by a glitch in the software updated from CrowdStrike, a cybersecurity firm whose software is used by businesses around the world to protect against hackers and outside breaches. What about inside breaches? And the CrowdStrike is the breacher. Anyway, a problem in the code caused computers running Microsoft Windows operating system to crash. However, symptoms are slowly starting to get back online. Systems are starting to slowly get back online as North Americans and the East Coast start their daily commute. At about 5 a.m. EDT, American Airlines said it was unable to reestablish its operations. Some analysts have said that this was the worst cyber event since 2017, when older Microsoft Windows operating systems were shut down by the WannaCry ransom. The attack was estimated to have affected computer systems in 150 countries. So it's really important to know your enemy, folks. It's probably CrowdStrike. But let's look and see who didn't get affected. Russiagate cheerleaders, spy agency links, what you need to know about CrowdStrike, the firm behind the global IT outage, the firm behind the global IT outage. A leading name in cybersecurity, CrowdStrike was deeply involved in the Russiagate hoax. the CrowdStrike released a defective update to its cloud-based security software on Friday that left an array of users around the world, including banks, airlines, media outlets, and government agencies, unable to use their IT systems. The company issued a fix within several hours of the problem being identified, but thousands of flights remained canceled or delayed onto Friday afternoon, while hospitals, police departments, and businesses continued to report issues getting back online. Among the clients listed of CrowdStrike's websites are Amazon, Google, Visa, and Intel. More than 80% of the United States governments use CrowdStrike, as do the national governments of Australia, Germany, Israel, and others. So, first off, let's look at how precarious your life is if constrained to the global Siberian gulag. Look very carefully how quickly they were taken to take you out and look at all the aspects of life they can affect. Founded by its CEO George Kurtz and the former CTO Dmitry Aporovich in 2011, CrowdStrike released its flagship Falcon platform 2 years later. The Falcon platform requires deep access to a client's devices, meaning that a faulty update can crash not just the software, but the device itself, as happened on a global scale on Friday. Deep access, as in deep state access to those systems globally. Less than a year after CrowdStrike was founded, Kurtz and Aporovich brought on board former FBI Executive Assistant Director Sean Henry to head up its cybersecurity consultation wing. CrowdStrike was hired by the United States Democratic National Committee to investigate the theft of data from its servers in 2016. Published by WikiLeaks, the data revealed that the DNC had rigged the Democratic Party primary against Bernie Sanders and that Hillary Clinton had effectively paid to control the committee. CrowdStrike concluded that Russia was behind the breach when Henry testified to Congress that the company saw activity that we believe was consistent with activity we'd seen previously and had associated with the Russian government. Henry's assessment bolstered the January 2017 intelligence community assessment in which the U.S. spy agencies determined that Russia exfiltrated large volumes of data from the DNC. This document in turn was used to justify Special Counsel Robert Mueller's 2-year probe into the alleged Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. However, the full transcript of Henry's testimony was not declassified until 2020. In the complete transcript, Henry told lawmakers that his company had, quote, no evidence that any files were actually exfiltrated from the DNC servers and that there was only circumstantial evidence and indicators that the data was exfiltrated. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange suggested in 2016 that a DNC staffer named Seth Rich, who died in suspicious circumstances after an apparent breach, was the source of the leak. Former NSA official and whistleblower William Binney argued in 2017 that all available evidence pointed to the leak being from the work of the disgruntled DC insider. So that's CrowdStrike. They're after the crowd, controlling democracy. They aren't named HackerStrike. No, that's just a side game, an attack, the attacker side hustle, the hackers of which it makes up these criminals. They make up who the hackers are. I told you this when Snowjob's information was letting us know that they can make you look like anybody anywhere. They can look like them, make look like anybody anywhere. It was in the documentation. And these are the people that all these businesses around the world go to. Deep access. A global order for the connected Siberians, but not those in Siberia. There's a lesson here. Let us see what we can find. The read, Russia unaffected by global IT meltdown. Well, why is that? Well, I don't know. Let's read. Russia tech infrastructure has not been affected by global Windows 10 outage, the Ministry of Digital Development, Communications, and Mass Media has reported. The crisis illustrates the importance of becoming self-sufficient in terms of critical software, this ministry has stressed. So, right there, folks, did my listener hear it? More specifically the ministry, added, "The situation with Microsoft once again demonstrates the significance of import substitution of foreign software. First of all, that critical information infrastructure is officially," the officials added, the Russian government resolved to lessen the country's dependence on foreign technologies and goods in 2014 after Western nations imposed sanctions on Moscow over Crimea." Here we have it again, the reoccurring lessons. Well, I know what you're becoming self-sufficient and being non-dependent. Not using products or services foreign to you, or substantially so. Self-reliant, at least, in the mutual open source aid of each other, if not self-sufficient, creating your non-dependence on those folks. Now, that's going to be a large order to fill for all societies foreign to the technology or not weaned from the digital environment and soon to be blockchained to the Siberian Gulag, sustainable indentured servitude, or foreign ideological debt slavery. But that's, we're told here how to stay away from danger. We have the effects of the globe, and it didn't affect Russia. What? The country can become self-sufficient. We may get close to self-reliant. But it take us. And I've been suggesting and advocating these things for years. We see how we can go about this. We see example after example what gets affected and what doesn't. What the people behind the scenes, behind the puppets that we watch, what they are capable of doing. And we see time after time what doesn't affect them, what doesn't affect who they targeted. And it's to stay away. It's to not touch them, not be involved with what they do. Few of us understand the technology that we use. Few of us understand the operating technology that we use. But it's going to require, this is why open source is interesting, and Windows. I mean, you'd think that the big company like that would have protection, but they don't. No, they're part of that system. We're watching, it's the movie right before us on where we need to continue to resist and not engage as best we can. If your life is not tangled up with the digital connection, it's going to be very much harder for them, the BlackRock, the State Street, the officials, the people, the executives that take pride, the executive branch of the government, taking rules and ruining your life, causing division in your life. It's going to be harder and harder for them to do that to you as you can wean yourself from their goods and services. So here it is right here. We get to see the evidence of it all. And choose accordingly. I mean, it's not going to be easy. I can't see it's going to be easy. They're not wanting it to be easy, but it is in our control to make those choices right now. And I say we got Fourth Amendment coming back, maybe. We have the latest decisions on the Supreme Court coming back and showing us that agency and the agency is not powerful, is not law. We also see due process has to be followed. I keep pressing these things for yourselves, protecting yourselves, making it work. And that leads to an accountability of sorts in that it's a different type of an accountability. If they limited government can't touch you because they have certain things that they're limited to do, then you've just shown that you're not in the jurisdiction. There's another way to look at that. But what do we have when we have people that are liars and there's no, the law, property doesn't mean anything to them. They're just rogue elements in the world. They're literally lawless. And they use law like anybody might use law to work around and use as loopholes to hurt other people. Very important decision comes down, but we see the fecklessness of it all in some regard. And but we do see some of the truths. And I'm going to go through a different type of proof here. We hear, again, I've told you, when you get the other side, somebody who's wronging you, to admit to their wrong. They do something that admits under objective scrutiny that they are criminal. As has happened to me in my condition here. You just look at it, you shake your head. Why'd you do that? But anyway, they'll do that. You just wait patiently, and I guess it's just supposed to come out. It just does. It's happened again people who do not recognize property rights, do not want to follow the law, want to make it up, is given authority, and without accountability globally. And I don't understand, I still don't figure this out, but there's a group of people. They're special, they're chosen, and they are because they're not being touched. Israeli settlements illegal, a top UN court said. Israel's construction of settlements in Palestinian land violates the Geneva Convention, amounts to a policy of de facto annexation, the International Court of Justice has declared. Reading out of the non-binding advisory opinion, ICJ President Nawaf Salam described, hold up, wait, non-binding? Then what's the point? But that's not the interesting part here. Let us listen to the illegal occupier of the whole of Palestine admit that its actual territory claim what it would be and how it fulfills what the non-binding observation of 14 or 15 other so-called judges had to say. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has dismissed the false ruling, insisting that West Bank is Jewish land. The Jewish people are not occupiers in their own land, not in our eternal capital Jerusalem, not in the lands of our ancestors of Judea and Samaria, Netanyahu said in a statement shortly after the verdict was read out. Let us look at this more closely, though. If you've listened to the past broad episodes, I've gone through this. Part of it now is confirmed by Satan Yehu himself. Zionist Federation movement deception aside, using the Jews for illicit geopolitical ends, Satan Yehu is saying the actual claim for the territory is not the entirety of Palestine, but only to the lands of our ancestors in Judea and Samaria, which for now puts our eternal capital, Jerusalem, here into question, if you think about what he said, and Samaria aside for the moment. Because I've never heard that claim made before pursuant to a biblical authority, or I guess the Jewish authority, which that reference to Samaria is a modern international law claim, not an Abrahamic law claim. Even if we treat it as a valid claim for my point here. Satan Yehu's only Jewish state claim by what seems to be a fraudulent representation for a whole people claiming a particular land aside is for Judea, just as I explained years ago about. As well, Judea, the direct inheritance from the man Israel, is not of his father Abraham. And I asked you to go look at that. Look very carefully, and if you found something different, let me know how you see this work out. So, by Satan Yehu's own words, his claim is exclusively for Judea, and actually nothing more. Just for the sake of a better apprehension, as I explained previously years ago, go look at a map depicting the land of Benjamin and Judea, and tell me, does that subdivision made by Israel, the man, include the entirety of Palestine? Seriously, go look. Inform yourselves. This is critical. There's people being genocided over these deceptive claims. And if I take no mind to qualifying the truth of any of the claims Satan Yehu is admitting here, the state of Israel really only belongs within the land border of Judea, the land of the Jews, so-called. He should be using Judeans if Satan Yehu was not being deceptive as well. But then, if he did that, he and his other evil doers couldn't fulfill their bloodlust through genocide, with Genocide Joe's exuberant help, which support will likely here continue under the Zionist compromise Trump administration as well. They've all touched the wall, folks. I don't know why, but they've all touched the wall. If America's first, why do they go down and touch the wall? And then it's a false declaration. And we're seeing it right here, out of Satan Yehu's own mouth, Judea. So while we're looking at that map, noticing that Jerusalem, the eternal capital, Jerusalem is in the land of Benjamin, not Judea. And the only way Satan Yehu can claim Jerusalem is by also claiming Benjamin renamed Samaria, or by referring to kingdoms of Judea, not the land of the lands inherited from Israel, the man, the sons and the grandsons' inheritance. These mandala effect gerrymanderings, I suppose, in proper word, but the rechanging of the lines by naming things such as Samaria are not identified until after the first century by an historian on top of that. So that's hardly an ancient land inheritance of the man Israel to his sons and grandsons, and we were renaming it Samaria. It didn't exist. The latter kingdoms that are identified provide no authority for any land claim either, the inhabitants of which, nevertheless, weren't exclusively Jews, so-called. Indeed, the Palestinians had two names for the same place about Samaria, meaning they coexisted there too, and autonomously. And so the reference to Samaria is not a reference to an ancient land, but the reference to the land made for the purposes of recent international law in trespass. These are not the names of the land heirs to their original inheritance, so Satan Yehu's claim to Samaria is bogus on its face. It's not Abrahamic law either, which is irrelevant, essentially, to the granted inheritance by Israel, the man, the son, and which is the son after Abraham, his father being long gone, Abraham being long gone since when that came. So, and no modern nation or association of nations had or have any authority to redefine the ancient land grants either. In other words, this UN and these nations at all, we're going to recognize some country in someone else's state. No, they have no authority to redesignate these lands by names. So even if no one puts any authority on findings of the ICJ under international law, Satan Yehu, the deceiver, the genocider, admits his Zionist movement is committing the crime in the West Bank identified by the ICJ. He also admits then to committing crimes in Gaza then, and criminally trespassing everything outside of the land of Judea, whether or not he would or could have such a right within the land of Judea. So even adding Samaria admits to less than the entirety of Palestine and would not allow the Zionist Federation to occupy the north or threaten Lebanon or the south, where they would be ruining everything there, threatening on Egypt. None of it. The ICJ finding, then, is far more bogus than Netanyahu's led on, and he exploits that. But the ICJ opinion is correct, given the only claim that can be asserted is the state of Israel might be proper within the land once known as Judea. So maybe we can think about, step back a little bit, who's supporting all that? Maybe U.S. Congressman Zionist Speaker Johnson of the U.S. Knesset needs to be apprised of his misadventure, allowing the Treasury to be appropriated for anything outside of the land of, not the kingdom of Judea, but the land of Judea. And if we were to also admit to commit further trespass against lawful inhabitants of their land and unconditionally agree that the land of Judea is the land of the Jews exclusively, as well as disregarding the anti-Semitism such as trespass creates against those Semitic people living there, such as the Palestinians, whether Muslim, Christian, or otherwise distinct, what is our excuse then? How many things do we look past to justify this group of people who just admitted through their leader that they're claiming Judea, then relying not on Abrahamic designations, but international law, a historian's interpretation of the name of someplace? When does this crime stop? And when does the influence of these criminals stop in this country called the United States of America? When? Is the same question you can ask that Massey was asking at the start of the broadcast. What gives you the authority to do that? If you're going to do things like the Supreme Court says, read for strict compliance, we need to assert the strict compliance. And I approached all this as a land property rights matter. I have no concept of their belief systems one way or the other. But I see this as a land property rights discussion. He's making a claim to Judea the rest of it is a bogus incorporation, then what is he doing outside of Judea if we just don't even look at any other problems? Is the problem of the world? Is this extension given to people who are allowed to hurt without real authority, actual authority? And who does? And it's why in this country, and most countries will at least talk about it, why using the law is important. It's how we got here. It's what keeps our order. It's what why we're a nation. And in the United States, relative to property, it's why we're a nation unique in the world. Our problem today is we've been living under people who have taken an authority within the government and then extended their lack of authority on us, and no one checked them. Going back to the Tennessee case, the Supreme Court itself made a trust breach. And yet the states, being separate, the uniqueness of this organization, the United States and the federal government, that duality, shows that these words in the Constitution are supposed to mean something, and they're big. They're a big deal. And our failures today, from all of us, not going back when we're wrong and sticking to it and supporting those that have been wrong and sticking to it, that to force the issues that, again, the great Kobe swindle I thought was going to be the catalyst for. Something like it can still be, but it's going to take people stepping up. It's not just fight, fight, fight. It's not an iconic picture, the Iwo Jima of Americanosity. No, it's the Americans understanding their uniqueness, their mutual power, and protecting themselves, and not putting up with those that would extend an authority out and claim it actual power. We've heard plenty of examples today in this broadcast. I hope something I've said gets you to think more clearly, more importantly, take the knowledge, get excited, go learn some things that you find coming against you, learn what you need to say to stop it, and then show others what you've done. This is episode BTWRLM 586. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Join us next.
next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.